And welcome to the React Show, episode 16. We're going to have so much fun today. We're going to talk about stuff at more of a high level when it comes to your business, when it comes to a product, and how we can, you know, learn from mistakes that are often made at companies and build upon them to create software that's truly created for the end user. So it's going to be fun. I'm just laughing because Austin is making silly faces and stuff at me, but that's okay.
Well, I was I was putting my hand together in prayer and bowing my head in thanks to all of these, like every single company I've worked at, like has given me so many examples of glaring failures of how to not do things. And it's helped me to really solidify my life purpose of like trying to run things properly and like die knowing like, oh, I didn't make all those other mistakes everyone else made.
Yeah.
My tally's not that good right now, but I'm trying.
Yeah. Well, I would love to learn more, and I would even, maybe this is definitely another episode, but look at discussing why all these companies end up doing the same things wrong over and over again. But we'll leave that one for now.
I'm sure we will get to it. We'll touch.
Yeah, it's not something I would talk much about, I'm sure, but, you know.
Oh, no. It'd be a monologue on my end.
So we're with Owl Creek, a high-performance React consultancy. We're happy to bring you this show on a weekly basis, and we're glad to go on this journey together. So I'm your host Thomas with my co-host Austin. Welcome to the show, Austin.
Thanks for having me, T-Man Squad Leader. Appreciate it.
Oh boy. If you have any feedback or questions, like if you totally didn't like that little aside Austin had there, you know, we would love to hear from you at the React Show at owlcreek.studio. Or if you have any other feedback, of course, too. So without any further introduction, I think we should get into it. So I think we'll start with you, Austin. What have you seen at, you know, other companies in terms of where they started out wrong or where they went down the wrong path?
One that like really comes to mind, I have three that come to mind very blatant, like starkly. The first one is I worked at a game company and we worked on the customer support team and we took their app. We worked with this customer support team quite closely and were able to like really figure out what was wrong with like their current tool suite, and we like increased the average efficiency per worker by like nearly 10,000% through like a really fragmented tool suite of like their ticket closing time went from something like 30 minutes down to like sometimes under a minute. They were able to like quickly just jump in, do a transaction, boom, all integrated. And it took like 2 years to do that. And once it got to the point, the company was like, oh, well, since they got so good at like one person managing a lot of different things, they fired 90% of the customer support team. Mm-hmm. And then this company ended up floundering and lost a few of its like products that it tried launching, kept failing and failing, and then the lack of support for the people who were invested heavily into their first successful game, the lack of support left these people quite dissatisfied, and their profits have kind of stagnated since. So they literally shot themselves in the foot by executing their own support team and disbanding our tool team, actually, and like fired four of our coworkers for like lack of performance or something.
Wow.
Second one was I was on a entertainment based, I would say like thing that you go on, like on the water. I don't want to like be too specific, but there was a buffet on this thing, and it was like 9 p.m. We were pretty drunk. The buffet was closing. We run into the buffet. I worked at the company that owned this thing, making an app for them. And I'll never forget watching.
So
like, all
you
these,
were you were drunk on the job, or you just happened to be there? But you were...
Well, it was kind of like part. It's part of the lifestyle of the people that frequent these.
I just
figure
there might be listeners that would want that same lifestyle, you know. So I was just trying to
get but so then. I'll never forget watching like this huge shopping cart Tupperware getting, it was like a big soup of all this food from the buffet. And there was like chicken wings plunking off of this tray, uneaten, all this uneaten food going into these huge Tupperwares that were then disposed of in ways that I thought were quite inefficient. And I was like, hey, this prototype an app where we can start tracking and weighing the food so we can estimate better to the food services to, like, figure out what we need when we can, like, measure against, like, passenger amounts. And then I was told I had the prototype ready, and then I had the whole thing ready, and then was called into an office, and they were like, hey, look, we're going to like focus on our environmental approach in like starting in 2025. Like, that's our goal. And I'm just like, can I just get back on board and just do this and forget you? And then we have it done like now. And they were, that's not how things work around here. It takes time to
So you had a solution to what they wanted, but it was too soon.
It was too soon.
We don't want the solution right away. We want it to take a while.
Hey, we need to suffer as a species a little bit longer before, like, we have the people really crying and begging for stuff. So then we can really steal the shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty much. I don't know. I have no clue.
Yeah. I mean, I have some theories that'd be interesting to talk about later on. I'll put a bookmark in that. Yeah, did you have...
I think the main one is that they're lizard people, right?
Yeah, I have some theories. Well, I don't want to interrupt this telling here though. So you could continue.
I'm just playing. That was a joke.
I know.
Was that you? If you say something on a stream, you say like, I have not like had suicidal thoughts, or am not like trying to take my life or something, in case they come after you, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So there's that too. But then the third one is a experience we share together, which I kind of want to use as a semi-basis this talk.
Did you want to start with that, or did you want to get to it a little bit later here?
We can just, like, I'm kind of done with my random insights into my past failures. I'm sure everyone can share, experiences like this, too.
Yeah, so you shared those, and you have on our show notes here the user journey, right? So that makes me wonder... Right. How does what is the user journey, and how does it tie into these stories you just told? Like, you know, is there a tie-in? Did they look at the user? What is it, first of all, I guess? We'll start there.
Right. Well, the user journey is usually used in branding when you've kind of like figured out what you're going to create and you have this app idea, and there's a UPS truck, of course. Sorry about the sound. But once you like have this idea, you're like, oh, okay, like when do we acquire the user, and like what is the first thing they see related to our app, and like how do we get them to like maintain being sticking around and paying for our product or whatever. And this, as I started creating my own software more and more recently, I realized that most of the software being created nowadays is very fragmented. Like, everyone is using a bunch of different tools to achieve a purpose, and there's all these fragmented user journeys where everyone's journey is like helping people piece together their journey. It's this Frankenstein workflow that people are adopting.
So what do you mean exactly by a person's user journey?
So this is where you get into the topic of like I like to talk about businesses more like workers at businesses versus like customers when I use this example. Mm-hmm. So, for example, in one of the companies we work at together, we specialized in building some tool that a collection of users use, and we don't really even know what these users are doing outside of our tool. We don't really even know what they do inside of the tool, mm-hmm. to be honest. There's some features in it, right?
Yep.
Where instead I would say, what's the user journey like this person when they wake up and they like get to work? Mm-hmm. What do they do? Like, what does this person, this, what is their workflow? They open up their email. They then do this and that. And then, oh, eventually they get to our app. Like, why, how they get to our app? What were they doing to use it? And then,
yeah.
How do they, what do they do with the byproduct of the app?
Uh-huh.
Versus instead of just, we kind of cut off all of that massive fat around like their whole day and isolate our product versus like understanding who this person is and what do they do.
Yeah. Right? Okay. Yeah. Role? So this is like, what I've always thought of as understanding the user. Like, if you're building a product, right, it's the most important thing in my opinion is understanding them, understanding what makes them tick, understanding why they do the things they do, and understanding what problems they want to solve and understanding how best to solve them. So I've always like started there. And now you're talking about like you start there, but then you also need to carry it through into the development of your software for them and look at the entire journey. Am I getting this correct?
Right. So, like, for example, back to that first thing with a customer support agent, they were using, in the gaming industry, they were using a collection of, like, 4 or 5 tools that they had put together for, like, how to, like, get emails, transfer emails, then, like, turn them into these tickets, and then they had some really hacky database, like, lookup modifier tool. And then so it was maybe like 4 tools to do all of this. And so we like, instead of doing all of that, we hooked into the form that was going into from the game where they would send a customer support request. Mm-hmm. And we like handled that entire workflow of all of those tools as one management system that was like heavily integrated with like what that person did. And so they were able to, they didn't have to ever switch screens. They didn't have to like log into another app or anything. They could do everything from a streamlined workflow application we built.
That makes sense. That makes me wonder though, like, could you have a person whose job it was to figure these things out, to figure out the user journey and figure out how to break it down so it can be implemented in software. Would that benefit this situation?
Yeah, that should be, maybe it's not that person, but someone does have to know this kind of knowledge. So there does need to be a facilitator. But I think that before you do anything at all, you should really be like, what are we doing?
And yeah, like, yeah. I'm jumping the gun here, basically. I'm talking about how to do it, but you're still saying, like, the first step is understanding all of this in the first place.
Right, because, like, you see a lot of people, like, they're like, oh, we're trying to, like, jump and create revenue and, like, make this SaaS and make some, like, fix some solution, but everyone's just like, there's this huge pile of fragmented software like that everyone's using, like, oh, I use like Slack for this and it integrates with this with the chats and it makes the to-dos and this and the Zapier does the that in my spreadsheets and then the this and the that, and it's like,
all right, so what I'm hearing from you, Austin, is that there is a very haphazard approach to solving the user's problem because we don't fully understand, or because nobody fully understands the user's journey. So anytime any issue comes up, people just throw a solution at that one specific problem without trying to understand the larger user journey. Is that correct?
Right. No one really takes the full time to people talk about automating stuff, but people focus on like these micro parts of processes and create like fragmented microprocesses all over the place. Whereas like I like to approach a client and be like, hey, when did you wake up in the morning? Like, what did you do in your first hour? And then you like find out like, oh, he like meditated or did this, and that like influences perhaps like how you should design the product or something. Mm-hmm. And then like they get to work and like they open their laptop, right? And that's where the real journey begins, when you're like building a software. Or maybe it's before the laptop, maybe they're like using fax and like have some documents or something. So it's like once they enter the workspace context, like what happens from start to finish and figuring out, like, that's the journey.
Yeah.
When you enter a context in general.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. It's not possible to build a good solution to someone if you don't understand them. And I know in this case, we've been mostly talking about like a specific person maybe, but this also applies to a consumer app that might have a billion people. Like, it's your job to both understand your job, if you want to do good work and build non-fragmented software, right, is to understand the users of your software, whether it's the average user or all the people around the edges. Like, you might want to cater your software to all of them in some way. And so the only way you can really do that is to understand them in a holistic sense, right?
This is where I had that idea yesterday of like, these things are kind of like arrays. And so you have like this user with all of their variables and whatevers that come through this software you build, and these variables like set off processes and stuff, and then you have like the result and like configuring your application to fit that first object in the array as it comes through that map of it, right? And then as you like go through the next iteration of the map, you add like a user object with different variables or different values for variables that are already defined, right?
Yeah.
And like building out from there where it makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, I think that makes sense. So we have on our show notes a specific example. Would this be a good time to get into that?
Yeah, sure. That was what I kind of talked about that a little bit earlier with the gaming company, with the example of like the multiple things. But at the company we're working at right now, we are we're kind of experiencing trying to do it right a year later. And like it's a situation that you get in because of like stakeholder interest, you know, and what needs to happen doesn't matter according to you. It's like what needs to push the dollar, right? So in a perfect world, we would have been able to do this a year ago at founding, right? But we're finally starting to now talk to the people who use our product at an engineer to a product user level. And we're discovering things where we're like, we have no clue like that they were doing this or using it this way or anything for a year, like a whole year. And that's quite terrifying, because there's all these processes that these teams have built up in isolation as groups or individuals that we now look at and we're like, oh my goodness, this whole thing is like this mess, and we're part of this like horrible Frankenstein that we need, that we're now responsible for, like, because they're getting bugs and errors in the tools that they've chosen to use that are outside of our context. But because the integration is so heavy, it's like blocking their integration with us. So it then becomes our responsibility to how to like, What do we do for them? How do we solve these solutions when you have all these things you have no control over? So like making sure you do that from the beginning is really important, so that you don't end up in a situation like this where, I mean, we're going to be churning for probably like a month, 2-3 months as we like transition into a different way of working.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I think you explained it well. It's not a uncommon thing. In fact, this seems to be more like the default way of developing software is the fragmented approach like we've talked about. And it is interesting, you know, looking at, okay, how do we sort of solve this issue? Like, we have this fragmented software and we did not really understand the user's journey very well. We had, like Austin was saying, users that use the software in ways we didn't expect. We really didn't know what they were doing with it. And it's even kind of more frustrating because these are users we can easily talk to. It's an internal tool, right? And so we can talk to the people in the company that use it. So there's not really any good excuse for not understanding it. It can definitely be more of a challenge when you have like a consumer application where like you actually need to find the users and get them to talk to you. And you know, like that.
Well, that's like touches on the fragmentation, like, because we have like, we're on email, we're on Zoom, we're on Skype, not Skype, but Slack. We're on like, what else? We're using Jira. What else do we communicate through in a company? And it's like, it's all over the place. But like the fragmentation exists in communication as well within a company. And it's like, the symptoms match, like, it's rampant everywhere. Like, they're literally a click away, but we can't even figure out how to get in touch with them.
Yeah. Or even what this is like, not even true only of this place, but like, not even knowing who to get in touch with, you know, it should be.
Yeah, easy. Today I literally had to like tell this guy, he like sent me screenshots of an app I have no context in. I'm like, hey, that's not me. And he's like, oh, well, it's actually this. And I'm like, well, you need to get in touch with this person instead.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, and he's a leader on his team. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah. So I'm kind of like wanting to spend a small amount of time talking about how, okay, well, first of all, I want to talk a little bit about how or why this situation is the way it is. But before that, I thought I could, you know, talk about maybe some of my experiences that would tie into this, which is, one of the companies that I worked at, they had a lot of like enterprise users, and they would work directly with them a lot of times. So we had direct contact with the users, but it was the same situation. It was mostly the salespeople that would interact with the actual users. And there was not like two-way communication between engineering and either sales or the user. And so on the engineering side, we're making the software for this user. We didn't really understand the user at all. We knew nothing about how they used it. All we would know is when sales says, oh, we need to land this next contract and they want this feature, make it happen in the software, you know? And this is like the, you know, more classic sales driven approach. I've actually been in this situation in multiple companies where you get a not direct contact, and there was nobody that was facilitating that direct contact. So once again, you end up with this really fragmented software where we would literally in the code be like, oh yeah, that feature only exists for that client that we no longer even have anymore or whatever. And like, it didn't get integrated or anything. It just sales wanted it. We had to say yes. Like, there was never any like, oh, but why? Or how does this fit in? It's just, okay, you have to do it. So that's like just some of my experiences, and that makes me like think, why do we both have these experiences at all these different companies? I know it's not just us. I know a lot of them are this way. So I'm curious, Austin, what your opinion is. Before we get into the solutions, I think it's important to at least talk about the problems, you know, and why they happen.
Well, oftentimes I find that excuse I've had for this from my superiors was like they're trying to protect the engineers so that they can work on something. And like, and we can focus and make our stuff, and we end up in a silo, and everyone's complaining about silos, and we're like working, we're not even working with a direct translation. We're working with like a translation of a translation of some of the problem, and then like we don't even know we're working with the translation or how it was translated. We're just working with something. So it could be coming from a totally different language. Like, we don't know the context of where it's even coming from.
Yeah.
Isn't it funny, this fragmentation theme? That's like a fragmented communication creates fragmented software, like, and fragmented companies that... just kind of, it's like a leaky boat. Like, maybe it's floating, but like you're constantly throwing the bucket out, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The water.
Yeah, I can't really help myself here, but you know me, I like to look at things from a systems approach, right? So like, to me, I'm seeing two things. I'm seeing, number one, specialization and the negative externalities of specialization. You might think, I know we're often trained to think that specialization is great and it's good, but I think that is just something coming from the way capitalism works. And so to me, I trace a lot of that back to the way capitalism functions. The more specialized you are in capitalism, the easier it is, especially as like a sort of, maybe not an owner, but like as a worker, the easier it is to get a more stable job and a higher paying income and that kind of thing. So people tend towards specialization, and companies tend towards specialization as well, because they see that, oh, it would make economic sense if I have somebody that's really, really good at their job doing their job, and I'll pay them extra for it. And so we end up with these silos. So you end up with engineers who are only supposed to do engineering. Like, all you should be doing is programming. That's your job. You're a hacker. Like, other people are supposed to be taking care of the rest of it, right? I think that's a big reason why we end up in this situation, because we're hired to be the programmer, you know, in a lot of cases. It's something we don't like to end up in, a position we don't like to end up in our consultancy, for that specific reason, because we don't think we can aid the user to come up with the best solution if we're put into that silo. But it happens a lot of times anyways. Even, you know, I think most people I've talked to that are programmers have experienced that. I don't know. That's number one of my two systems that I think this ties into. And the second is, and I know you're going to love this one, Austin, it's hierarchies. I think what happens oftentimes is people higher up in the chain have different priorities than the user. Their priorities don't always align with the user in the short term. And again, because of capitalism, that's how we look at things in the short term. And so they might be looking at it as, oh, I need to get this big project out so that my boss thinks well of me. You know, that's what they're focused on. They're not, they are kind of focused on the user, even like that. Maybe that's their job, is to interact with the user. Even then, if they're higher up this chain, they're often not exactly looking out for the user so much as looking out for themselves and advancing their own position within the hierarchy. So I don't know. I'm curious what you're thinking about these, Austin, but those are my thoughts.
Well, the first one, the reason that these, it was like talking about specialization and corporations hiring specialists. I feel like, yeah, it's good to have specialists in terms of like we should be good at like something and like be an expert at something. But what the workforce does to us is it treats us as like units instead of humans, where yes. Like we like you, I should be a specialist at what I'm doing, but it, there needs to be human interaction with all of the network of what is going on, where like you have a call with someone to understand like what's like going on. It doesn't mean that you're just like performing your task, but you're like performing your actual task of translating things like problems into software. And a problem doesn't come to you on a sheet of paper. It's like another human is having a problem. How do you like talk to them and figure out what's going on there, instead of just like, hey, you're a printer, print out this program for us based on this like cipher.
Yeah, so what happens then if you have somebody specialized in that task? It's their job to talk to the user and translate it for engineering or whoever.
Yeah, that would be a great specialization to have, where these people could kind of teleport around like the entire network of the chain that is like a company, and help like to alleviate all of this stuff.
I think I have experienced that a number of times, and I don't think it's turned out that well. And that's because of it. I think it actually creates fragmentation, because their understanding of things does not always get translated right to engineering or to whoever they're talking to. So in my ideal flow, you know, as we're talking about flows, is that it happens more in parallel. So you might have this person that is supposed to understand the entire user journey and the user journey of all the users, right? Well, why can't they meet with the user along with, you know, somebody from engineering, so that they can sort of work in synergy together instead of trying to translate everything? I mean, I think I agree that like if you found somebody that could somehow do that, maybe that would work. Maybe I've just never run into that person, but it seems like it usually does.
Well, yeah, it was like more of an idea of like actual facilitation versus them being an isolated node of like going back and like maintaining it. But they would be like, they would bring together a nexus of like, it ties into the second part of the hierarchy conversation. I don't know if like it needs to be looked at as a north and south, up and down thing, but I mean, a hierarchy does exist in some way of like a chain of communication flow. Like something spawns a request and it propagates down the chain, and then it goes back up, right? And if you have like, if it were one to one for, or one to many in all instances, it might not be like super effective, but that shouldn't mean that the communication flow among a chain should it's flat. It's not a up and down. So everyone has weight. So like if this facilitator brings together like the three, the product, the engineering, and the whatever into like this translation session, like it would then, decisions would not be made in that meeting that would affect parts of the node down or up the chain without like there being communication about it. So there might be like relaying back and forth, but like if a team lead is making promises for the engineering team that can't be fulfilled because one of the engineers on the team knows something else, they're not communicating effectively, and it's fragmented in that sense. So there needs to be like an openness of communication that transcends like rushing to get answers.
Yeah, I think
in building stuff.
Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off. I'm just like,
no, you're good.
I think you're talking more about communication, whereas I'm thinking more about incentives. Like what I often see is you have hierarchies where their incentives aren't aligned with the user journey. It especially seems to happen further up the hierarchy, where people become more concerned about their own advancement or whatever. And to me, that seems like one of the systemic issues that leads to this.
Well, we had a funny example of that that happened recently. We were in a meeting and we were talking about like a feature that we were implementing into the tool, and the high of the company like blasted the team about like, why are you doing that? Like, I make the decisions. This is not necessary. It's just excess chaff to the feature. And it was a very well vetted idea. It needed to be in. And then like 2 hours later, we get a communication from upper management where it's like, hey, can you actually please include that feature? Like, it's like, yeah, you literally are so out of the context of like what you're demanding us to make that you can't even lead properly. And so, yeah, it's like, and his incentives are get this thing out the door versus, oh, well, actually your incentive is to make sure that it doesn't explode in your face and like it needs to be built out properly.
Like, yeah. Yeah. Okay. I feel like we've, you know, explored that now. So, and the next question is, well, I don't know. Are you laughing at me? Did I not explore it well enough?
No, it's funny. You're like shepherding me through this.
I mean, if you want, you could shepherard me through it, but I don't think it would go as well because I don't know what I'm talking about.
But, me either. Like, I think that's life, though, right?
Yeah. So let's say we've analyzed this situation. Do we have any solutions? You know, I'm asking you, Austin. Do you have a solution to this problem or problems?
Well, I mean, there's no real rush to do anything. Like, everyone's rushing around doing stuff because they, like, create reasons to rush around and do stuff. But, like, if you sat still for 10 minutes, 20 minutes and didn't do anything, everything would be fine. Like, everything would be okay. Like,
unless you're doing CPR, okay. But otherwise, yeah.
Yeah, so there are exceptions to the rule, of course. But like we need to slow down and like consider what we're doing a little bit more. That's the solution, and like ask more questions, like make sure that it comes down to communication. What is really going on? Confirming, understanding, and making sure that everything is being taken into account for.
Is there a way to make this happen?
Well, I guess we could like talk, like get into. I don't know. I feel like I was just asked a trick question.
Not really. No, you're to me. I'm hearing a lot of like sort of. Maybe
this is high level
ideals
stuff.
You know, and I'm thinking like it's harder for me to like picture that, like what does that mean, what are you talking about, you know, like is there a concrete like say you're, how about this, let's say you're starting a business and you have a product idea, what's the right way to start out and do things?
Well, figuring out like what your what your goal even is, like why are you doing that? Like, okay, here's what we're doing, and then that leads to why are you doing that? Leads to like a person divulging why they're doing something, and it's like, okay, how are you doing that right now, or how would you imagine doing that?
So,
and then start building out a process.
I'm cutting in again. I'm just trying to understand. So let's say you're starting a company and you want to make a widget. What do you do to figure out how to make it? Maybe it's a software widget to make it easier for us to think about. Like, what do you do? Like, what should I do? Should I hire an engineering team, project manager, you know, what should I do?
Well, you should hire Owl Creek Studio and get them to walk through, like, wondering, hey, like, okay, so you want to build this widget. Is a widget the thing that you should be building? Is that, like, that's the outcome that you want, but is it, like, the outcome you need?
Yeah.
Does it actually do what you need?
Right, how do we find that out?
So you begin asking them, like, this is where you walk
asking
through
who?
That
Asking, you said begin asking them. Who are we asking?
The user, the person that approached you with the problem, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so approaching the user and just being like, hey, what, you think you need this widget, but like, what are you doing? Yes. Like, what is your process? Like, what is not just this part of the process, but like, what led you to this? Like, why are you here? Like, what is the purpose of your life? Why were you even born? No, you only have to be with them. That's therapy. But you want to find out, like, you need to find the edge of the context where they were like laying at the beach and then they realize like, oh, I have to go do this. And they're like now in a brand new context. And it's like, what are all of the steps, like A to Z, like all of the steps that they do until they can be like, okay, I can go back to the beach and like chill.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. All right. So now we've asked the user all these questions. How do we put this into a process that the business can, you know, repeat to create this widget in a way that isn't fragmented?
Well, you have to start somewhere, and you maybe do end up creating fragmented software to some degree, but because you have like a comprehensive map of the entire process, what you're building integrates with their flow properly, and all of these components that you build, they should ideally be sharing the same infrastructure and architecture and communicating with each other.
I got a little bit lost there. You're saying it should all fit into this process. What is this process? What do you...
The context that, like, from there, I'm at the beach getting...
So you're saying everything that this company builds for the widget should fit in with solving this user's problem. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, correct.
Okay. So the something you might want to sort of encode in your company then would be that question. Maybe when you start the next, you know, project, it starts with, okay, how does this solve the user's problem? You know, is that maybe what you're saying?
Yes and no, because if you focus too much on the problem, you can get really fixated on creating a tool that then becomes like your only focus. Like, it's important to also figure out like what led to this problem, right? Because that problem was created by an existing process or an existing context. And so what exists already needs to be analyzed for like its integrity before just building something new within it.
So before you start building something, you look at how does this solve the user's problem, and then how does this potentially address whatever created the user's problem in the first place?
Correct.
Okay, cool. So we've got our widget software company, and we've talked to our user. We understand everything about the user, you know, why they exist, you know. We understand all these things, right? Now we've sort of encoded in our business practices that anytime we start work on a new feature or something, we're going to analyze how does this solve the user's problem and how does this address what creates the problem in the first place. And I'm guessing maybe you don't always develop a feature to solve both of those at the same time, but it's at least something to keep in mind to make sure that you're on the right journey. Is that right?
Right.
Okay, cool. So what happens next?
Well, that's where, like, we're creating human beings. Let's go back to when a dude was, like, cutting. Imagine the first guy cutting down the first tree. Like, go back to the dude who had to figure out how to make
an
axe.
That sounds really sad, but I will go along with you.
Yeah, sure, but, like, say he was, like, okay, not... Well, I'm just saying tools.
I know.
Like,
we'll
unfortunately, like, most of the stuff we made is, like, does horrible things, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like, anyways, we have the first human cutting down a tree with an axe.
Right. He was like, hey, I want to make a nice house in harmony with nature, and I'm going to make sure the trunk is properly, like, turned into, like, something that composts and feeds the... He did it really right. Okay, Thomas? But
when they first started doing it, I'm sure you're right. That's how they approached it. So right. It sounds good to me.
So he had to make this, tool, right? And so this, like the act of cutting down the tree, it was like a thing of necessity. It was like this really hard place that was painful. Like he needed to be able to innovate and create this axe and be able to cut down a tree. And now, yeah, sure, it's horrible now because we just like zing trees left and right. But like that's what you need to do is like find the place within their workflow, within their context, where they're like experiencing the most pain, and find a way to offer a solution to what do we create tools for to be more effective at what we do. So you start looking for the areas of least effectiveness.
So you're talking about prioritization then?
Like, correct.
Okay. I agree. Yeah, that makes sense. There was one thing I was really trying to pry out of you, though.
Was there a stepping stone I jumped over?
No. Actually, I hadn't even thought of that. And I think it's a great point that you made. It just wasn't the thing I was driving towards. So I'm just a
cow in the pen, and you got a cattle prod. This is what I meant.
I don't know. We're talking about this, and I'm like... To me, there's a next step we haven't talked about yet. So you've made your you weren't really jumping ahead. It was something I think we glossed over in getting to this point. So I think it was perfect that you put it in there. I was just like, I wanted to get back to this, which before I forget, basically, which is just.
Well, please enlighten me, please. I'm waiting. Squad leader, please.
So. My thinking is you've built this solution now, right? You made your widget. What happens next? There's one more critical step. I don't know if you're thinking of it. If not,
I'm telling
just jump
you,
in
I haven't even
it.
Built a widget yet. That's what I'm saying.
So I'm saying we've gone through the process. We did all these things. We made sure we found the right prioritization and we found the right thing to solve first. We've solved it. We made this part of the widget. What do you do then? There's a critical next step, and I won't keep putting you on the spot. That next step is getting verification from the user. And so that is something that I see is skipped all the time. So you make your widget. That's when you go to the user before you even consider your job done and say, does this solve your problem? Let me watch you use it. Let me see if this does what I thought it was going to do.
I had an instance where the user didn't know for 2 months that the feature that we built for them was done.
Yeah. Yep. That's not uncommon, I think. Especially given the places that we've worked in where we're not really talking directly to the user, nobody ever really verifies it. Maybe someone along the chain goes, yeah, that meets the criteria of the tickets that were created. Launch it. And then we move on with our life, you know?
So what are we left with? Fragmented communication leading to fragmented companies, leading to fragmented software, like individual, and each component itself is fragmented because it has not been even done to completion nor properly created via some real understanding. So it's really screwed up. It's really bad. I thought it was bad, but now that I'm realizing how bad it is, I'm really amazed that humanity is still functioning. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting to look at the users of these fragmented products later in the stage when it's all fragmented and everything.
But it's like, it's horrifying. It's like,
it's like you can see how you did solve some of their problems, right? Like you see some of what you wrote being used. usually what you find is some of it's not being used and some of it's being used in ways you didn't expect. But the biggest thing you usually find is they're using spreadsheets to make your software function the way they need it to.
Right. And somehow, yeah, we've created different problems for them now that then they, yes. Yeah, the spreadsheets.
Yes, exactly. They're like, oh, the software doesn't let me do this, that I need to do whatever. So now I need a spreadsheet to like track this and calculate this. So I can plug it in here.
How common is that? I didn't even like really think about how common that might horrifyingly be. Because actually, like, I remember the guy showing us in the last meeting, he had like spreadsheets and stuff everywhere.
Yep.
Like, this is the point. This is what the whole thing I'm talking about is. It's horrible.
I think when it comes especially to like software for business users, it's like literally always like that. For consumers, what often happens is probably even worse. They just don't use your software, or only a few of them do. You don't end up making something very good.
Yeah, if your customers are having to use spreadsheets to use your app, you're really screwed up, dude. But you have a really good product, I guess, if they're willing to do that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, that's what I'm saying. Like, usually you have solved something, and that's why they're using it at all. So it's not like you lost completely. You just are sort of really far off the mark from where you could have been if you had done a better job understanding and following the user journey.
Well, and that's the thing that people seem to forget when they don't, they rush to create something, is they don't realize that it really is about delayed gratification to some degree. Like, the reason we rush software out is because there's some panic to like get something done and like relieve that stress of a deadline or something, versus like getting rid of that and being like, hey, what are we making? And let's do it right, not thinking about anything, and it correct.
And I think that brings up a really great point. The person that should be deciding those deadlines is usually not the person that does decide them. Like, so when I work directly with users, I just ask them, I say, hey, if I do it right and do it in this way, it will let us do this in the future, but it's going to take me this long. Is that okay? And literally, like, I don't know, 98% of the time, they're like, yeah, just do it this way, do it right. I want this to work well. When I'm working with not the user, somebody in between, it's almost always the opposite. No, I told so-and-so it was going to be deployed by this date and time, so it better be done by then, no matter what, you know?
Well, the worst part about this is no one thinks about the long term. Like, it's not just like something that is like behind us. It's now some baggage that we're carrying on with us into the future. So you can either carry like crappy software around as baggage, slowing your booty down, or you create stuff that empowers you to actually like travel multidimensionally as a company. But in order to do that right, you have to like give yourself the space to do it right. And it pays off much more in the long term. And
yeah.
I mean, it's kind of contradicting in a way too, because like innovation occurs out of like stress and necessity, which creates like iterations. But if you like iterate, which can lead to like poor solutions in the long term, right? Like the axe, and now we're deforesting the planet. But so it comes about like a place from where you're creating like holistic creation of the software, right? Like looking at the company we're running or working with and the company they're running, and like what kind of workplace and environment do we want to create for all these fragmented human beings who are the company? People don't realize that like all of this rests on humans. Like, if there were no humans at the company wouldn't exist. Like, maybe there's some robots at a manufacturer plant or something, but, like, that'll shut down, too, eventually when a human isn't doing something.
Yeah.
And it's, like, instead of trying to cut humans out of the whole process, like, they are the process and need to be, like,
a part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think this has been a lot of fun. Unfortunately, I only have a couple more minutes left here. Did you have anything you wanted to close us out with here, Austin, other than the beautiful things you were just saying?
Well, no, I mean, I just like hope that people, when they like go into creating products, instead of like creating fragmented software as a service that it has to interact with all this other software, like try to really actually solve some people's real problems before just giving them a fragmented tool suite to take money from them to like get something out the door and like create actual solutions, not more problems.
Yeah, totally. And I don't know, this feels kind of weird pitching this now, but this is something we care deeply about at Owl Creek. And, you know, this whole podcast wasn't just to sell you on the consultancy, but this is, you know, something that we're totally, you know, interested in exploring with people if they want to look at how to better improve understanding the user journey for their software and that kind of thing. You know, definitely reach out to us, owlcreek.studio. You can find out more information. This has been a lot of fun. I feel like I learned a lot. And I think we'll have to close it out here. If you have any more feedback or questions, send it to the React Show at owlcreek.studio. That's all I have. Is that it for you, Austin?
Yeah, thanks for listening to me blab again, y'all. see you next time.
Yeah, see y'all. Bye.